Radio Gorgeous, brought to you in collaboration with Henpicked, Wisdom of Women. Today, I'm in the City of London to meet a solicitor to talk about the case of the locked-in wife. She's Jane Porter, and she's from Leicester Aldridge, which has offices in Bournemouth, Southampton, and London, advising businesses and individuals on international law and wills and things like that. Anyway, hi, Jane. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, Josephine. Nice to be here.
So this started off, well, for me, my first encounter was an article in Henpicked. And as it had thousands of hits, Deborah, who runs Henpicked, said, please go and interview Jane about the locked-in wife. So this is a case of Mrs. Owens, who, in her own words, is locked into a loveless and desperately unhappy marriage. And it seems rather unbelievable that in this day and age, a woman who wants to end a marriage is unable to, at least for the time being. The judge said that he didn't consider the husband's behaviour unreasonable enough, and so he wouldn't grant a divorce. It raises the question of whether it's time for divorce laws to be looked at again, and what can a woman do if she finds herself in this situation?
Yes, I think this has almost been a case waiting to happen for quite a long time now. The government of the day has been talking about changing the divorce laws for many years. In fact, back in 1996, we had a new Family Law Act which did remove fault from divorce. That was never enacted. In fact, it was repealed in 2014. So we're still in exactly the same situation where two of the grounds for divorce are fault-based.
Okay, so what does this mean in sort of normal terms then?
What this means is that if you've got a spouse who believes their marriage has irretrievably broken down and has not got 2 years separation with the other spouse's consent or 5 years without their consent, then they have to rely on a fault. And if they haven't, and they're not in a relationship, or the other party isn't in a relationship with somebody else, then the only other fault is unreasonable behaviour. And this brings you back to the case in point.
So would both of them have to cite it? How does it work?
No, there's only one petitioner who alleges that the respondent, the other party, in this case, the wife here, Mrs. Owen, alleged that her husband had behaved unreasonably. So that's how it's worked. That's why it's fault-based.
But how can someone refuse that to be true?
Because the behaviour is subjective. It's that particular husband in that particular situation, and whether that wife finds it unreasonable.
But the thing is, can't you just fall out of love with someone and let's be grown up nowadays and have a marriage where we can just say, really sorry, we've grown out of this. But let's both agree, you know. And actually, no, that's the problem. You've got to both agree, haven't you?
Well, exactly. And you're in a situation where people have fallen out. You know, the trust has gone. Any sort of consensus has disappeared. You know, people aren't speaking and they're not sitting down and chatting a lot of the time. Some of the time they are, but a lot of the time they're not. So that's, you know, quite unrealistic in a lot of situations.
Can it be the other way around, that a woman can refuse unreasonable behaviour to a man?
Yeah. So absolutely. Okay. It's not gender biased. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, if the allegations had been reversed, absolutely. Yeah.
So what could a woman do if she found herself in situation? Because apparently there are over 600 cases in Britain today. What are her options, Jane?
Well, the thing is that Mrs. Owens was quite unlucky, I suppose I'd put it that way, in that the majority of unreasonable behaviour petitions are undefended. I mean, I've been practising for 30 years and I think I've done two or three defended petitions in my career, and most of those were right at the beginning. So you just rarely get a defended divorce. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, Mr. Owens is exerting his right to defend.
Okay, but is there anything we could do to, you know, I mean, as a lawyer or stepping in to make it fair?
Well, with the legislation as it is at the moment, she has to wait the period of separation, 2 years with his consent. And I believe they separated in February 2015, according to the reports. So 2 years from there if he agrees, but the likelihood of him agreeing, I suspect, is quite small, because otherwise he wouldn't be defending her unreasonable behaviour, but I don't know, or 5 years if he doesn't agree.
So she's allowed to move out then?
Yeah, yes. Oh, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. No, no, she can't be forced to live in the same house. Okay. No, for sure. No, 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 no. She's not an imprisoned wife. Okay. She's just a locked-in wife.
It says locked-in, I imagine, these bars. Yeah.
No, 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 no. It's not quite as bad as that.
What if a woman didn't have the financial resources to leave the home to prove separation of two years or 5 years without the spouse's consent?
I mean, in this day and age, it's... I think it would be quite improbable that they wouldn't be able to leave the home. I mean, there are resources out there, public, family, those sort of situations. I mean, having worked through at least a couple of recessions, that often had proved a situation where houses couldn't... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Houses couldn't be sold. Mm-hmm. And just families couldn't separate and divorce because they just couldn't, you know, realise the capital in order to buy two homes. So there are sort of practical and economic consequences which may parties together.
Yes, put us off divorcing.
Yeah. Well, yes, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Even though the relationship has clearly broken down, yes.
So would it be possible to be separated officially and live under the same roof, and would the judge accept that?
Yes, I mean, there is case law that sort of prescribes what would need to occur, and some judges will insist on you sort of going down to the minutiae, i.e. not only the parties sort of sleep separately, but they eat separately, they want their own washing, they, you know, right down to, you know, their shopping and all that sort of stuff.
Imagine which is trying to get a man to do those things.
Well, not only that, but, you know, they could have children you're within the home, and how do you manage that? I think that's the most difficult situation. Well, it is one of the most difficult situations in divorce generally, you know, how the children deal with the whole sort of consequences of the fallout. But, you know, if you're trying to separate, you've got, you know, spouses within their home with children that are trying to separate, it's very, very difficult.
And which child sits with which and which...
Well, potentially, if you had to get down to that minutiae. But to be honest, you know, most divorces, as I say, and unreasonable behaviour petitions go through uncontested, so you just don't get to that situation.
Sometimes we have to accept that we change, and maybe couples accept that they'd be happier if they could move on without blame. Is that possible to have a blameless divorce?
Well, as I say, you know, in a separation situation, yes, under the current legislation. The legislation is such that it requires you to live apart for a period of time, and if people want to get divorced immediately, they're thrown back onto the blame game of adultery or unreasonable behaviour. There is no, you know, legislation currently that alters that.
Remember when we were young and a photographer had to catch the sort of
person... Oh, there was a bit of that, yes.
Yeah, in the act.
And the act, indeed.
And so you'd go with a prostitute and then have a photograph taken so that you could get divorced.
Well, at least we have moved on since then. But there is, yes, there is plenty of opportunity, I would suggest, now to improve the situation. It's just whether the government of the day has the commitment to do that.
Now, how could a government be so backward and old-fashioned, you know?
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. It's just that they have competing priorities, they have limited time, limited budgets, and there are a lot of people who think that it would just be the thin end of the wedge and marriage won't be worth the paper it's written on and everybody be rushing to get divorces, etc.
So it's making it a little bit harder to divorce so that we might try a bit harder then.
To make it work. Mm. But I'm not sure that that's the case, to be honest. You know, I think if you know, right-thinking adults have decided that their marriage is over, just to force them to stay together because the legislation isn't there to enable them to part, I don't think is a recipe for a reconciliation, to be honest.
And what top tips would you give anyone considering a divorce so this sort of thing doesn't happen?
Oh! What, so they don't get a defended divorce? Well, I think a lot of it, like everything, it's sort of all in the communication. I think, you know, you just need to try and keep the lines of communication open.
Yes.
I mean, at the end of the day, invariably, you'll have children, so they're going to have to be things that you discuss. I think that's something to bear in mind is the question of timing. You know, invariably, you find where divorces are very contested, that one party isn't so emotionally advanced towards the door or the exit door than the other. So giving them the time to catch up and, you know, deal with things emotionally, because the emotional toil is massive. And people do underestimate that. You know, it can take 3-5 years or whatever to get over
it's like,
a long
it's
marriage.
Like a death,
they say,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's very equivalent to a bereavement in those terms. So perhaps having a counsellor, a therapist, and just having someone to talk to objectively about it can help. Try and focus on the bigger picture, the end game, not getting bogged down in the minutiae. Always think about the children. You know, I do quite a bit of mediation as well, and you often have to talk to clients about what they would want their children to be saying to them sort of 20 years on as to how they dealt with their divorce. Because you do find a lot of divorcing couples. You question actually who is the adult in the arrangement. You know, the children often sort of step up to the mark and are much more adult and responsible than some of their parents. So there are lots of things that you can do to make the experience more manageable and the fallout not so great.
Well, we are from a kind of divorce culture now, so obviously, I mean, it's quite, you know, people have alternative weekends, Wednesdays, you know. I mean, the people I know, because my parents were divorced in 1967, and that was really unusual, and they just didn't know how to do it. I mean, at least one in two in a classroom, their parents are divorced. So.
Oh, extraordinary. I think, yes, absolutely. I think there's quite a, for want of a better description, a sort of support network at schools and for kids generally, that I think children whose parents are still together are unfortunately not the norm. You know, it's almost sort of reverse psychology, really. But yes, if you can use alternative ways of resolving things, mediation, collaborative law, that sort of thing, then that eases the process of the breakup.
And how can your company help people? Do you do a lot of divorces?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I mean, we have a dedicated family team who just deals with relationship breakdown issues, be they divorces, children, financial claims, anything like that. And we're all members of Resolution, which is the professional organisation which focuses on trying to resolve these disputes as collaboratively and amicably as you can. So yes, we're all dedicated lawyers in that field.
Not too expensive. I mean, that's scared by the solicitor's fees. You know, I mean, you know, it is quite a terrifying thing, and it's sort of legal, and it's also kind of quite shaming as well. People are going to come in, and how much money do you need? What do you need? You know, it's sort of so invasive at a time of when you're feeling so vulnerable.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The sort of whole privacy angle of having to share your financial circumstances with complete strangers and all your emotional issues. It is quite a soul-bearing stage. But in terms of the cost, I mean, most family lawyers will cost their time, cost their work on a time basis. So, the case is generally as expensive as the clients make it, to be honest. You know, if there's a lot of argument and there are a lot of issues and assets are hidden and all that sort of thing, then it's going to cost much more than a very straightforward settlement.
So I think what we're learning from today is just try and be as grown up as possible when you divorce.
Yes, I think that's not a bad way to, a bad message to get out there.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Not at all, Josephine. Thank you for inviting me.
And for more information about Hempic, go to hempic.net. Radio Gorgeous supports women. Women support Radio Gorgeous. RadioGorgeous.com.